This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex, a natural solution to chronic pain. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposomes and nanotechnology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. Sourced and manufactured in the United States, this product contains 1,600 milligrams of curcumin and powerful antioxidant properties. This plant-based curcumin is used to possibly reduce inflammation, block proteins that trigger swelling, and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Don't live with pain when there's an all-natural, science-based remedy that works without adverse side effects. Get free shipping on all of your orders at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. We're like the U.S. mail. Neither rain nor hail nor storm can stay us from our rounds because...
Nor COVID.
Indeed. and that's important. These days. With me is Layla Mutin, who's our nutritionist in residence, and we faithfully... convene every week to answer your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. We thank you for all the questions you've been sending us. And they, of course, don't have to be COVID-related. I wish we could stop talking about COVID-19. But COVID-19 appears to be making a little bit of a comeback. You know, its ratings were very good in March, April, May. Interest started to wane, but just in time to rescue its ratings for the summer season, it seems to have resurfaced. So, right?
The ratings are coming back up. The
ratings are coming back up. So, you know, there's, you know, and it has had repercussions on us here in the Northeast, Layla. Even though these outbreaks are mostly occurring in places other than the killing zone that we inhabit, which is New York City and outlying boroughs, we've really been in the thick of it. And there's sort of an unprecedented low number of deaths and a really small number of hospitalizations compared to what we experienced at the peak. But other parts of the country are taking it on the chin. Not so much in terms of deaths, because it appears that, you know, their cases, they appear to be more in a younger population. I think older individuals and institutions like nursing homes are getting the message that, you know, the vulnerable need to be protected. But the kids are pretty frustrated with the lockdown, and they've partied hardy, and some of them have protested, and, you know, getting out there, and the sputum is flying.
People are, especially if they're talking or shouting or singing.
Or lip locking, even, you know, because. Because it's hard to keep young people away from one another. And, you know, it's graduation time and, you know, it's time for a jailbreak. Well, that's what's happening. But unfortunately, we're experiencing some of the consequences because COVID-19 hasn't disappeared. But either it is. In my opinion, becoming attenuated in severity, the virus itself, or else we're better able to handle it, or the people who are getting it are younger.
Yeah.
So interesting.
And, you know, they're testing positive, but so far as we see, that's just the extent that it's going. Nobody's dropping dead, thank God. Hey, Dr. Hoffman, you know, over the weekend, I was at a quote graduation party. One of my little cousins, my second cousin, she just graduated from high school, and they held the party, you know, outside in front of their home, so that people socially distance. We were donning our masks and we were being careful, and hand sanitizer was available. And even some of the elderly, I had an aunt come out. I had my mother, who goes out every day because she wants to.
And she's in her 80s?
She's 84. And she came, and we all had a wonderful time. I had another auntie across the street. We're very fortunate. We're very blessed that we're all pretty much close, and we're also close together in proximity. She was waving out the window because she wanted to be home, and absolutely, we brought her over some food. We were very careful about it, but it was very nice.
Yeah. No, it sounds
And
like
we were able
a good
to have a party. It
adaptation
was
to the current circumstances.
right. It wasn't 70 people. It was about 15. And, you know, some people were more distant than others, and that's fine. It's where everybody's comfortable. But we were able to have this social occasion. And you know what? It was nice. It was nice to see everybody. And it was nice to have a celebration like that for my cousin. So, yeah.
So a couple of interesting statistics. One that just came out of Italy is they looked at the age group 20 to 39, and what they found is that fully 80% of them who tested positive for COVID-19 with the PCR test, that 80% of them were asymptomatic. So what it suggests is that a lot of people may have been exposed inadvertently, and we can only hope that actually a lot of people have been exposed. And I think that accounts for the differential because other parts of the country locked down early, and may have opened up prematurely. New York, you know, we really got the message early on that it's pretty serious stuff. We locked down, but not before a lot of people got sick. And I actually interviewed an interesting doctor last night who strongly believes that a lot of people were exposed as early as even December or January of 20 of 2019, 2020, and especially here in the New York area. And as a result, we may have achieved a semblance of herd immunity. I mean, we can't depend on that, and we still should exercise precautions, but it may be that by virtue of being hit hard, we're more protected. But unfortunately, because of the experience of other states, they're delaying our opening up. And you know, I walked around the city this morning, and a lot of restaurants are posting these hopeful signs like "We're open, we're back," you know, but they're not really because they've got tables outside, and you know, and they're really nowhere near capacity, and you know, they need to do volume to survive. So it's a little sad walking around here. Something weird happened last night. You know, you're over there. Actually, you're staying on Long Island this week. But you know, around 9:30, you know, I'm watching TV, and all of a sudden I hear these explosions. Well, you know, I mean, there's stuff going on. There's civil disorder, you know, riots and things like that.
Fireworks.
But I'm thinking, yeah, probably fireworks. You know, it sounds a little bit too, you know, unless people are using, you know, mortars,
Cherry
you know,
bombs,
cherries,
mortars, yep.
you know, this is probably like an organized thing. And I look out the window, and over the East River, there's like the Macy's fireworks display. But it was like a very kind of abbreviated version of that. And it was weird because no announcements, and intentionally so, because they didn't want people to gather.
They didn't want people to gather.
It was sort of like a
And that's how
surprise
they
thing.
said they were going to do it. That's how they said they were going to do it.
Is
That's
that
weird.
in various boroughs at locations not yet disclosed, they're going to set out fireworks sequentially several days this week. But I wish, you know, there was no warning. It was kind of weird, you know.
It was kind of weird, and I think it was disconcerting to many people
Exactly.
who are hearing fireworks around the place. I know even back in Queens where I live, you know, before I came back out here a few days ago, we were hearing fireworks. I said, "Hey, what's going on? Sounds like it's 3 blocks away."
Well, there is this issue of the illicit fireworks, but I'm thinking like either this is the organized Macy's thing, or else, man, these kids got a hold of some pretty nice fireworks, you know, because, you know, but it turned out to be, you know, the Macy's fireworks. Anyway, we live in weird times. It's going to be a weird holiday without the Macy's fireworks display here in New York, the traditional fireworks display. All right. So another article I came across, very interesting, is okay. So they talk about antibodies, 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 antibodies. So they got these antibody tests, and these antibody tests show whether you've been exposed to the virus. And this is supposed to be the so-called immunity passport, right? If you've got it, you know, okay. But now they've said, We don't know. We don't know if that really confers immunity. We don't know how long it lasts. We don't know if it's complete. So let's not rely on these antibody tests. But an interesting thing, you know, if you study immunology, it's very complicated, but I'll break it down, is there is what's called humoral immunity and T-cell immunity. And humoral immunity is antibodies. Okay, you acquire these antibodies after an exposure to a vaccine or an infection. Okay, and we're testing for antibodies, That's a B-cell mediated type of immunity. But then there are these T-cells. So there's this study just came out. It has actually has not been peer reviewed, but they've kind of rushed it into the public square. And here's what they found. Cross-reactive SARS-CoV-2 T-cell epitopes revealing pre-existing T-cell responses were found in 81% of unexposed individuals. Now, that's a wild card in this pandemic, because what it means is like, okay, so you test antibody negative, so they say you're vulnerable. But you may not be vulnerable. Why? By virtue of having a cold, because colds are caused by
it's a mixed bag with colds.
Some are coronavirus, some are rhinoviruses. There's a lot of different viruses that cause colds.
Okay.
But many of us, I mean, over the past 5 years, I've had some bad colds, and I may well have had, you know, a coronavirus, not the SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus.
Right.
But who knows? I mean, some of us may already be somewhat immune. And that accounts for the fact that, you know, we've had these circumstances where people were literally in a packed environment. You know, they were on these cruise ships and nobody knew from, you know, SARS. I mean, from COVID-19.
Yeah.
And the net result is a lot of people got infected, but not everybody got infected. So what's up with that? You know? I mean, they were in close proximity. They were breathing the same air. They used the same, you know, HVAC system. And maybe some of them were immune, you know?
Yeah. Maybe some of them were more immune. Maybe they had a better, quote, terrain.
Yes.
You know, there's, a lot of question marks here.
Yep. So anyway, good stuff on the COVID-19 front. I mean, look, I'm optimistic about it. I just hope that, you know, our fear and apprehension, and also to some extent, some of the political manipulation of the situation don't get in the way of our resuming life. You know, I really want the kids to go back to school. I think it's very important for the kids to go back to school.
It's important for their socialization, and a lot of other psychological factors. You know, when a really little kid sees somebody in a mask, when a baby sees somebody in a mask, they cry. They're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is some psychological conditioning that's going on here.
Yeah, it's the ick factor multiplied, you know, by a thousand. So, all right. Well,
they should go back to school.
They should go back to school. I mean,
they play. That's how they socialize. That's how they grow and develop, is they play. They need to be with each other as well, not just to learn, but to play. Yeah.
And you know, in effect, maybe get exposed to it and create some more herd immunity. I mean, the fact is, I mean, they looked at, like, I think 30,000 children, you know, from around the world, and they found that there were some serious cases. There actually were some deaths. But seven out of 31,000, you know, very, very rare that there was, you know, a problem. And the kids were outliers because they had impaired immune systems for one reason or another. Maybe they had Down syndrome or some developmental disorder, autism or something that put them at higher risk. So, let's get to questions, please.
We have from Joan, we have an email. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm very stressed and upset regarding my latest LDL cholesterol results.
Let me interrupt here. I mean, I'm sorry to jump in. But I got to say,
go ahead.
Don't fixate on these numbers, please. You know,
please don't.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I've been taking bergamot for about 6 months, twice daily. And my LDL has gone from 199 to 212. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not much.
That could be from a day, that could be from day to day. I mean, like if I test you on Monday and then I test you again on Friday, I mean, it could just be the test is not perfectly accurate. Things fluctuate. You know, your biorhythms fluctuate, your metabolism fluctuates, your diet fluctuates, the weather fluctuates. Mm-hmm. You know, any number of factors.
Right. So I'm at odds with my doctor about the need for a statin. And Joan says, all other numbers are good. Let me recite some numbers here, Dr. Hoffman. Yeah. Triglycerides are 90.
Mm-hmm.
HDL is 111.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But with the total,
Wow, okay.
Yeah. With a total cholesterol of 341, I'm under a lot of pressure to take statins, even with low triglycerides, high HDL. Okay. I'm 72. I take Synthroid and lisinopril. And yes, I am overweight.
Yeah. I think I heard enough. I got to say, I mean, this perfectly illustrates the paint by numbers system of medicine that we exist in. Mm-hmm. You know, with a cholesterol of, with an HDL cholesterol of 111, that's usually highly protective. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I don't know the other circumstances of this case, but, women over 70, when it comes to primary prevention, they do very poorly with statins. They offer minimal protection. And in fact, what they do is they, in women especially, dramatically increase the risk for type 2 diabetes, 30%.
Yeah.
I don't know the particulars.
Well, what about hypothyroidism?
Here. Well, exactly. And that too could, you know, she may be undertreated. That is so often the case when I see people who are inadequately treated for hypothyroidism. They remain overweight, lethargic. Cholesterol tends to be higher when you're hypothyroid.
Yeah. So that could be something. Well, it's only what, 15 points, number one. A cholesterol like that, the total number isn't the most important. Yeah, we know, but it could be that also she's 72. And as we get older, mm-hmm. that LDL may be going up to save her brain.
Exactly. And here's the other thing, too, is we know that in women over 65 or 70, that the higher your cholesterol is, the more likely you are to reach 90 or 100. This is a feature of that's associated with survival. It's absolutely foolish, I think, for the doctors to consider statins in this case. The only thing that would change my mind about that is if we did an EBT heart scan on this lady, which we should do to really determine what's going on in the arteries, look at the calcium score.
Right.
And if the calcium score were, you know, significant, I'd say, well, okay, maybe we have to pull the trigger on this situation. But mm-hmm. from what I'm hearing, you were just treating the numbers. And it's causing anxiety, and it's you're leading to the employment of unnecessary drugs, and you know, we're off to the races to medicalize the problem, which is a non-problem.
Right. Okay. Joan, you know, your triglycerides are 90. I commend you for having them under 100. But those triglycerides could go a little lower.
Yeah, with a little more carb restriction, yeah.
Yeah, a little more carb restriction, and you may find that even if that LDL continues to stay, quote, high, that LDL pattern will be a better pattern. It'll be a pattern A.
And where's this doctor at? I mean, exactly. They should be doing the lipid typing.
Yes.
You know, where you do fractionation, you can explain
the NMR, the VAPS test.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those should be done. VAPS or NMR to look at the particles.
Yeah, and the large particles being benign, and the
if they're mostly pattern A, Joan, you're in great shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
It's actually right. Pattern A being good, A for effort, and B bad.
Bad, small, dense atherogenic particles.
Exactly. So. Right. You know, I just think this is just, it's bad enough to walk the streets of New York, you know, and then to come, I mean, this listening to these stories just demoralizes me about where medicine is going.
I know. All this harp about the cholesterol, and it's really keeping the eye off other things like inflammation, C-reactive protein, blood sugar, insulin levels, all of those other things.
LPA, homocysteine.
Lipoprotein little a, you know.
Yeah.
Is another, is more of a determinant, and that's been shown in recent research, yeah, than even LDL.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's not just the LDL, is it oxidized,
mm-hmm,
that LDL?
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing to be looked at.
Yep.
So, all right. Joan, that's us weighing in.
Yeah. But, you know, please, Joan, you know, don't let them scare you, because I think this is how medicine, you know, how we sell medical, right, intervention in this country is by scaring people into,
yeah,
compliance. And we don't want a population of people who are disempowered, fearful, and, you know, running to get on drugs to ameliorate problems that are non-problems. But kind of that's the, yeah, way the medical establishment and the pharmaceutical industry would like us to be. It's like, you know, obedient, you know, little sheep.
Yes. Yes, which is unfortunate. Yeah. All right. Moving on, we have a question from Isa. Isa says, love the podcast.
Oh, great.
I've suffered from reflux for over 20 years. I keep it in check with digestive enzymes, aloe, DGL, Endafin, L-glutamine.
Oh, yeah.
Isa, that's great.
Do it
that's
all.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Every couple of years, with any digression from a low-carb, low-sugar diet, I begin to cough a lot.
Mm-hmm.
An endoscopy.
That's a cough-related you know, reflux. Yeah.
Reflux, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. An endoscopy revealed a moderate to high level of reflux. I took a PPI, a proton pump inhibitor, for 6 months, and it took another 4 months to wean off.
It takes a long time. Yeah, you get hooked,
yeah,
on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I now take Tagamet when necessary, especially if I drink some red wine.
Oh.
Now, I also follow Jamie Kaufman's diet to the extent possible without going nuts.
Mm-hmm. So she wrote a book called Dropping Acid.
Dropping Acid. What, mm-hmm, a great title, right? Yeah. And, mm-hmm, she's got an extensive list of foods to avoid. Is there anything else you recommend? Would you recommend betaine hydrochloride? That could, yep, be something, because oftentimes reflux is because of too little stomach acid.
Yeah, that can help.
That might be worth a try.
Mm-hmm.
That might be worth a try. So, yeah, stick to the diet. Isa, stick to the diet. The DGL, the Endafin is most helpful. Sticking to the diet, making sure you're sitting upright after a meal for at least 3 hours. You know, people go have dinner and then lay down on the sofa with the remote control and start, mm-hmm, to channel surf and so forth, especially nowadays. But it may be worth a trial of HCL,
mm-hmm,
betaine hydrochloride.
And, you know, this new idea of intermittent fasting, I think, comes in here because it, you know, I think too, mm-hmm, many people eat late and then start eating early, and giving yourself an opportunity for digestive rest could probably help a lot of people with GERD. You know, going that additional, at the very least 12, maybe 14, maybe even up to 16 hours without eating, and confining,
yeah,
your eating to a narrow window of time during the day could, I mean, the problem with this patient, and this so often happens in our practice, right, is, you know, people listen to us, they're very well informed, they're very wonky, and they take a lot of the right things, and this person's,
yeah,
already taking the right things, and I think is maximizing the benefits that natural medicine can provide already, still is doing well. But hey, that red wine, that's problematic because it's a real, it's a histamine releaser, and
yes,
it can create a lot of reactivity.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you know, I myself, you know, I like red wine.
Mm.
I know that it causes me nasal congestion. I can get away with a little bit here and there, but if I had it, you know, frequently.
That could be the sulfites,
yeah,
too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For just
wouldn't work. Wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, Isa, best of luck. Stick to the diet the way you can, and the top two, the DGL, the Endafin.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. Okay.
Yeah.
Try the betaine hydrochloride. See how that works for you.
Yeah, for some people it can work. That's a Jonathan Wright move. And,
mm-hmm,
he's been talking about the benefits of, paradoxical benefits of taking a little bit of acid with your meals. You know,
to help digest.
Ever since I've been an integrative physician, you know, he introduced that idea in the, you know, in the 80s.
You know, I've heard of people taking, if I ever have indigestion, I take a little teaspoon of vinegar,
mm-hmm,
voila, it's gone. And that's
to acidify. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
It's not just, even so much that there's, it's so acidic that it actually breaks down the food, but it may just send a signal to the digestive tract to get things moving or get things going. You know, the other thing, that let's not forget something called iberogast. You know, or
that's an oldie but goodie.
Bitters, yeah. Digestive bitters. Sometimes that actually helps people. It helps with motility.
Yeah.
And, you know, there may be an issue with motility. And these things are what are called cholagogues. They support digestion. Actually, certain alcoholic beverages, the so-called aperitifs, do that. You know, Angostura bitters that's used in to make Manhattans, you know, that
right.
cocktail.
You could put that in a little seltzer or something.
Yeah, that rare times I have stomach problems, I sometimes take a little bit of Angostura bitters with, you know, with water. And it just sort of reboots your digestive system, you know, when, when you know, sometimes it loses track of, you know, whether things should go up or down. And, you know, so you need a reboot. And sometimes those bitters can set things moving in the right direction. But, you know, and the product Iberogast is available, I think, online, but it's popular in Europe for dealing with indigestion, dyspepsia. You know,
dyspepsia, right?
Upper GI stuff that's not necessarily amenable to acid blockade.
Right, right. It could be that you just need more acid to help it along. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Isa. We hope you feel better soon. Okay.
All right. Well, we're going to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. And what's coming up in part two? Give us a preview.
Oh, my wife has been sick with intermittent bronchitis and pneumonia. This has intensified.
Okay. We'll tackle that question when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with our nutritionist in residence, Layla Mudin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions, and we'll be right back.